My name is Mireya Loza. It's January 10th, 2008. I'm in Phoenix, Arizona with Larry Adams. Mr. Adams, tell me where you were born, when and where you were born.
I was born on a commercial dairy farm in South Plymouth, New York, which is in the central part of New York State.
And how was the town you were born in?
Well,
Can you describe it? It
was a typical small country. They call them hamlets back there, which means there was a cross-section of roads, a general store, and post office with one gas pump. And probably surrounding the hamlet was maybe a couple of hundred families. Mm-hmm. And that would translate into maybe 1,000 people. Mm-hmm. It was strictly a rural community, and many of the rural communities across the country are no more, mm-hmm. because houses, people have moved, have died. Mm-hmm. Their offspring have moved because of one reason or another. When I go back there, there is no one around alive that was there when I was a boy growing up. Mm-hmm. And we moved out here in November of 1955 to Phoenix, Arizona, to get out of the cold weather and the snow.
What did your parents do?
My father was in construction. If you travel up and down the East Coast and into the Midwest of the country, you'll find tall, what they call silos. Mm-hmm. And he built those silos for a company called Crane Silos for about 40 years. He built a lot of silos in the Midwestern part of the country and in Pennsylvania for the Amish farmers. Mm-hmm. And if you ever go to Pennsylvania and go to the Menon farm, the Menon health products, all of those silos on their properties were built by my father and his helper. Mm-hmm. My mother was a school teacher. Had she lived beyond the age of 58, she would have had the equivalent of a community college instructor that I once held here in Phoenix, Arizona. Mm-hmm. And it was because of the fact that she was a school teacher that my three younger brothers and I did so well when we started in school at the old one-room gray schoolhouse instead of the traditional red schoolhouse. Mm-hmm. And then from there, in 1946, I went from the country school to the city school in Norwich, New York, which is the county seat of Shenango County, where I graduated from high school in June of 1952.
Mm-hmm. And then after you graduated from high school?
After I graduated from high school, I spent 2 years in pre-veterinary medicine at Cornell University. As I tell people, I was supposed to have been a veterinarian instead of a banker, but it all worked out, and I had a wonderful life and a wonderful career. Mm-hmm. And as I said, we came out here in 1955 in November. My wife Lois, I had met her in an insurance company in Norwich, New York that my father and some other gentlemen had started because during the off-season he was into selling insurance and remodeling work in the carpenter industry. And I was actually raised by my grandparents who lived on the same property only because my mother taught school all day and my grandmother ended up babysitting. So I literally I had two sets of parents, my own natural parents and my grandparents who were all living on the same property. And that's the way it was in those days with many of the farm families. We all watched out for one another, and when there was work to be done, we shared the work. When there was sickness amongst any of the families, everybody else pitched in and did what we would call today home care nursing. Mm-hmm. And that is a lot of the influence in my early youth. I spent a lot of time in 4-H work and in Future Farmers of America, and it is a lot of that work and what I learned from my peers and other adults of those days and those experiences that that I used throughout my adult life as far as being a good citizen and getting along with other people and doing good work for whoever I might have been working for, whether it was with a bank or for ourselves and on behalf of other clients.
Mm-hmm. And so what kind of job or what kind of work did you do when you arrived in Phoenix?
Lois already had a job in the insurance industry, and she spent 52 years in the insurance industry. She retired 12 years ago, and the last 18, 20 years as an administrator. And she was the one actually that ran our businesses. She would come home nights and weekends and come up here in this office and take care of the books and pay the bills, and I was out meeting clients and doing what I was trained to do best. And so that's how we got to that's how we got into working for ourselves, which I did when we started our first company in June of 1974. I simply took my banking experience and moved to the other side of the desk representing small businesses in obtaining loans and other things that businesses needed not only in those days but today as well. And I also branched over into, that's when I got involved into a business instructor, as a business instructor with the Rio Salado Community College, primarily through their Small Business Institute. The Small Business Institute was started by a good friend of mine, Richard Medina, also a Hispanic, and a man, if he were alive today, would be a good source of information because his family were all part of the Bracero movement of the 1920s and 30s and 40s. And he started the Rio Salado Community College, of which I was the chairman of the board, and it was that concept that I took to Washington, D.C., in 1979 and 80, and presented it to four government agencies, of which we obtained funding for that particular entity, and we took that concept to the, I think there were eight or nine community colleges within the state at that time. We set those up, and that became, thanks to him, that became the role model for all of the small business development centers that you see within state governments all across the United States and in Europe. That concept has branched out many years ago to many of the European countries. If you were to go to colleges and universities, let's say in Great Britain or now in Germany, and now even the old, what used to be the Soviet Union, they have community colleges over there that work with small businesses the same as they do in this country.
Mm-hmm. So can you take me back to 1955 when you first got to Phoenix? Had you known something about the Bracero program on the East Coast? Had you heard anything about Braceros?
No, because where we grew up, there were no other nationalities except the Caucasians and the Puerto Ricans and the Afro-Americans out of New York and New Jersey. Mm-hmm. Of course, from my history and social studies in school, I knew of the Hispanics, or the Mexicans as they were called in those days, and it wasn't until I started my career with Seaboard Finance on August the 17th, 1957, that I got acquainted with the Mexican population and the Braceros. And that carried over into my career as a banker as well. My early recollection and involvement with the Bracero program is that we loaned, of course, money to those people. And since they were field workers primarily, it was not uncommon for me to spend a greater portion of my day in my car visiting all of the farm labor camps throughout the valley. I've made loans, I've collected loans to those good people. I love the Braceros, they're friends of mine. I ate their food. I ate sitting under a tree. I ate in the shacks that they lived in, and I saw their children being born, and they were like my own family. Mm-hmm. And even after I left banking after 20 years, as I would travel around the valley doing our consulting work, it was not uncommon for some of those families, especially some of the younger offspring who knew me. Maybe they didn't know my name, but they knew who I was, and they knew how much I had helped their families as a banker, and it was not uncommon for them to yell at me in a parking lot or in a restaurant or wherever. Now, for me to sit here and try and name names, it's been a long time ago. I wouldn't even venture a guess. But as a general rule, that was my involvement with the Bracero program. I attended a lot of the meetings. I was at the first meeting here in Phoenix, where Cesar Chavez came into town and was attempting to form a farm workers union. I was a member of the American Farm Bureau for many years, which of course was one of the supporting organizations for the farm worker program in those days. Mm-hmm. So I was immersed in the Bracero program from the standpoint I was their banker. I took care of their financial needs. As I said, I spent a lot of time in their homes, wherever those homes might be. So I always considered them like my own family or an extension of my own family. That went on for the greater part of my career, both in banking and after I left. I suspect maybe if I were to go out to certain places in the valley now, there might be some of the children of those people that I served 20, 30, 40 years ago as a banker that might recognize my name, of course. I don't think that that's a strong possibility, but you just never know. Mm-hmm. As my wife will tell you, that people will come up to me or they will holler at me that I don't even know that know me. I mean, I've lived here since 1955, and I've been all over this part of the country. So you just never know where you're going to run into people.
So what were some of your first impressions of this group? Had you heard things about the Braceros before meeting them?
Yes, I had, because before I went to work on my career, of course, I was doing other jobs. I wasn't sure if I was going to go back to college and finish my college degree at that time, or if I just wanted to get a job and begin a career. Well, it was how I began my career back in 57. I had taken my wife to work downtown, and there was a coffee shop on the corner of Central Avenue and Van Buren, which was the two center cross streets in downtown Phoenix. And I was sitting there one day and looking across the street at Seaboard Finance Company, and they had a help wanted sign. And so I went across the street. I'd never worked in an office, and I went in and I said, "You're looking for help?" And I said, "I'm looking for work. I don't have any idea what you do," I said, "other than you have something to do with money." I filled out an application, not thinking that I was going to get hired. 2 days later, I got a phone call, and they said, "When can you start to work?" And that was the beginning of a 20-year career in finance and banking. And I had built up a reputation in consumer finance, and I just went from consumer finance to banking and finished up my 20 years, and then Lois and I formed our own consulting company, and we ran that for the next 16 years, and that's how I got immersed into the Bracero program. And I knew what the Bracero program was, and I used to go down to the Valley Bank Ranch 3 or 4 times a year. And those people would come across the border, they would stay at the ranch, and then they would work themselves up by whatever means, and they would end up, it wasn't uncommon for me to see people that I saw on the ranch down near the border. Maybe 2 or 3 weeks later, I would be out on one of the many ranches in Glendale, like the Arrowhead Ranch, the Saguaro Ranch, or some of the other ranches that were bank customers, and I'd see these same people. And that's how the whole thing with me got me involved with the it was more than just part of my work as a banker. It became personal with me because being a farm boy and being used to hard labor, I knew what those people were going through. You know, trying to eke out a living, trying to raise a family and sustain themselves. You know, I could put myself in their shoes almost, having come from a farming background. Mm-hmm. That's basically my involvement in the Bracero program. I was down, if you will, where the rubber meets the road. Like I said, it was not uncommon for me to eat their meals, to mm-hmm. see their children being born, help them with their problems that may not have been had anything to do with my being a banker. They were having personal problems. They were having problems elsewhere that had nothing to do with my job as a banker. I saw to it that they got the help that they needed.
Mm-hmm. And so, can you describe a bit what the camps were like that you went to visit? Where were the men living? What were the conditions?
If you went to camps like out at Goodyear Farms in Litchfield, which is out about 30 miles west of us, they were shacks. They weren't necessarily what we're living in today. They were mainly shells with tar paper. They weren't always, shall we say, leak-proof. Mm-hmm. The conditions were what I would call, by any standard, not good, and in some cases deplorable. And it wasn't because the owners, treated them badly. It's just that those were the sign of times, and they didn't provide anything more suitable than what you saw. And in many cases, in some of the farms throughout the valley, they lived out under citrus trees. It was not uncommon to see canvas lean-tos, makeshift lean-tos, whatever they could get their hands on to get themselves out of the elements in case it rained. And so therefore, it was not good. Their food was prepared by themselves. There was no cafeteria. There was no cook shack like you would find if you were out on one of our many cattle ranches. And they had to shift for themselves the same as they would if they were in their own home or Mexico, wherever they came from. So by standards of those days, by standards today, well, let's put it this way. You and I probably wouldn't want to live under those same conditions. And unfortunately, we can go into sections of Phoenix and other parts of the country where you find just as deplorable living conditions by people of all walks of life that the Braceros had to put up with in order to make a living.
Mm-hmm. From what year to what year did you work with
Braceros? From 1957 through 1992.
Mm-hmm. And did you notice any changes over those years in terms of the conditions or the type of resources that you had to provide?
The housing got a little better. More and more of the farms were convinced for humanitarian reasons, to provide suitable housing. You very seldom found anybody living out under a citrus tree in a makeshift lean-to. The living conditions were better. I'm not so sure the food was any better. They still had to prepare their own food. Of course, the employer provided much of the food for the workers, in addition to a meager salary. So, if I were to go out, of course, the farm labor camps here, there are no more. Mm-hmm. and the ranches that I have mentioned are no longer working ranches. Mm-hmm. So therefore, the people that you see working in some of the farms out west that grow citrus, they are trucked to work, and then they go back, and most of them today rent homes, and there's no longer any what we used to refer to as the farm labor camps. So they all meet at a common pickup spot, and they jump on a truck or into a bus. There's a company here in town that's all they do with their buses is bus farm workers back and forth to the fields. So I would say that the overall condition have improved, but I think that that we as a nation, we as a group of employers who employ these people could do a lot better job overall, starting with proper living, sanitary conditions, health conditions, nutritional conditions, and that kind of thing. Because without the braceros, without farm labor, what little farm labor there is in this state would never get done. Mm-hmm. I think the wage situation is terrible. I don't think anybody should have to work for the wages that they work for. Unfortunately, they're not covered by minimum wage. And however, I do say that that the Farm Workers Union, which was started by Cesar Chavez, I think has done a lot for that element of our workforce. But there's a lot that should happen. There's a lot that could have happened a long time ago to make everything better for those people, especially since we are so dependent on that level of labor force to, for instance, work in the fields and pick our produce and plant our crops and that kind of thing.
Do you think as a banker, when you serve this community, the Bracero community, the services that you provide are different than the services you provide to another community? Are there certain services that you provide more often? Are there special needs?
Well, let me tell you, as a banker in those days, we provided whatever service anyone needed. Like, there was no discrimination. We weren't account numbers the way we are today. I have absolutely no use for the American system of banking. Mm-hmm. This may sound rather crude and cruel, but it's my opinion, having been there and done that. And I can say this basically across the board for any business, but as a banker, they treat their employees like crap and their customers even worse. And they don't want to do business with the average person on the street, not just the person working as a laborer, not necessarily. If you don't meet certain criteria, then the bank doesn't want anything to do with you, and that's why, unfortunately, we have these what I call 400% payday loan stores throughout the country. Mm-hmm. That are getting rich and ripping off poor people at the backs of making huge profits. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's the fault of the government, both state and federal. Those kinds of lending institutions should have never been allowed to come into existence.
Mm-hmm. What kind of services did you provide in specific to this community?
We as a banker, we financed their cars if they could afford one. We financed their appliances. Mm-hmm. We paid for their dental work. Whatever you and I would need today, the banker was already there. And of mm-hmm. course, we had to look at the individual on an individual basis. We had to make sure that they had sufficient income to, you know, repay a loan. And it was what I like to do on Friday afternoons, because I had such an outstanding staff of people at the branch that I worked at, is that I would go back in the note cage and I would open up a teller's machine and I would play teller, and the people would come in And, you know, they'd make their payments on their car, they'd make their payments on their washer and dryer, they'd do whatever else that they needed from the bank, and that's how I kept in touch with a lot of the Bracero families. And now, unfortunately, the banks thumb their nose at them, and I think that is despicable. Mm-hmm. And if you were to ask most anyone here in this state, mention my name, they have absolutely no use for me, because I have no use for them because of the way that they have treated people, a class of people, if you will, the laborers, not just farm laborers, but anybody who is out there doing manual labor, how they have treated the people that have made this state and this United States what it is today.
During your career, for the most part, did you work with undocumented or documented?
In those days, we made no distinction, mm-hmm. because I've been deeply involved in this immigration issue from various angles, identity theft especially. And I'll tell you this: that it is my opinion, and I made this very much aware as my part of my responsibility to President Reagan several years ago. That, you see, people who came across places like down here in Nogales, for instance, they carried what we called in those days a border crossing card. It was just a little piece of cardboard, not any bigger than that, with their name and several other pieces of information. And they would go back and cross the border every day to come into this state to work. With the advent of technology, if we had taken that simple border crossing card, and with the advent of technology, we would have never had 9/11. We would have been able to turn back the people coming in from other parts of the country who are the criminal aliens, and let the what I call the good guys come over to this side of the border to work. And yes, everybody needs to obey the law. But we know for a fact that it is not the people here that are here undocumented illegally. It is the criminal aliens that are coming across the border that are committing the crimes that the hardworking people are getting blamed for.
Mm-hmm. And so, for the most part, many of the families that you worked with did. Out of curiosity, did you ask for identification or other pieces of information?
No, because
in the past, like those cards.
No, because in those days, those people they were able to get. We trusted many of the documents that were coming across the border that were issued by the Mexican government or other governments wherever they might come from. Because we weren't worried about somebody doing something wrong. We weren't worried about identity theft the way we are today, and therefore it wasn't necessary for us to ask for exact identification, because most of those people did have driver's licenses, and some of them, of course, had Social Security cards. It was up to us to know our customer.
Did you ever happen to see a specific piece of identification used, the Bracero identification card?
Yes, and we used to use we used to go almost 100%, as I alluded to earlier, with the old border crossing card.
Mm-hmm.
Because in those days, the people coming across the border to work were probably more honest than you and I. I never felt in all the loans and all my dealings with the Braceros that anyone try to lie to me or cheat me.
And you never had instances where families defaulted on loans and left the area?
You know, that's an interesting question. I would say that out of all of the loans that I ever made to anybody, regardless of walk of life, mm-hmm. It wasn't the Braceros, it wasn't the Mexican nationals that defaulted on their loan or that left without paying their loan to the bank. Mm-hmm. It was people at my own level, the white collar crowd, that I had more trouble with on loan defaults, and I had a pretty good lending record. Mine was better than most, because when you loan money for as long as I did, you get a sense down in your gut, as I call it. You develop a seventh sense about people. And for instance, as I'm sitting here talking to you, I'm not judging you, I'm not sizing you up, but the longer we talk, the more I know that we could do business if I were going to loan money and you were coming in to borrow money. I could talk to people for 5 minutes and tell you, before I even took a credit application, whether or not I was going to loan you any money.
What about men who were here on very, very short temporary contracts through the official program? Would you loan them money if they were here for 2 or 3 months? Would it be more difficult in that case?
Well, we had a few of those, and yes, we did. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, they might be here for 2 or 3 months, and then they might go on to Salinas Valley in California.
Mm-hmm.
And regardless of, all I used to say to those people was, look, you're under contract to Arrowhead Ranches for this period of time. Where are you going next, if you know, and where are you going after that? And you got that information from them through their labor contractor.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I don't think in all the years, as I think back, they were always calling me. They always knew that they could call the bank Collect.
Mm-hmm.
They could get to a payphone or a phone. They could call and talk to us Collect. If there was a problem, if they were going to be late with a payment, and that's the way it worked.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was built on honesty and trust.
Mm-hmm. And these men who would be on temporary contracts, if you knew, for example, that they were going to be in Salinas or in some other place, for the most part, the men who were here in very, very short contracts through the Bracero program, what would they need loans for?
Well, the same thing that you and I need loans for today,
mm-hmm.
To buy cars, to buy appliances and furniture, maybe to finance dental work for their children, or
even if they were only here for a short period.
Well, sure, because after all, we're human beings. We all need good health. We
mm-hmm.
all need to pay our doctor. We all need to keep our teeth in shape. So we need dentists. The business of lending for whatever the purpose in those days is basically no different than it was then. The only difference is the way we lend. In those days, we shelled. You signed the note, or I took a lien on your car or whatever, and I gave you the cash. Now everybody carries a credit card.
Mm-hmm. And so, in that time, I mean, from 42 to 64, there was a lot of these temporary workers that were coming in. After 64, did you notice any particular change in the kind of loans you gave, or in the kind of environment that these families were in?
No, I think the type of person that we were lending to remained constant,
mm-hmm.
from offspring to offspring, because I loaned money to grandparents, I loaned money to their children and their children's children over a period of years, and I don't think that caliber of individual ever changed. And as I said earlier, unfortunately, the conditions under which they had to sustain themselves and work did not keep up with the times.
Mm-hmm.
And quite frankly, I don't know how some of the people survived. Of course, some of them didn't. Some of them had to go back. But for the most part, you know, they were very resourceful people. They did the same thing as my family did back east. Whenever there was a need, you rallied around and you did whatever you did to help your neighbor. And I saw that time after time after time taking place in the farm labor camps.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going towards the end of our interview. Is there anything else that you'd like to share with me about working with this particular community that you haven't already?
Well, I think that I would hope that very shortly we could get a handle on the immigration situation. What I had suggested to the National Small Business Advisory Council, that if we could develop some sort of a legitimate national ID based on the advanced technology of the old border crossing card, mm-hmm. whereby we could screen mm-hmm. the people coming in that we know are terrorists, the criminal aliens, and let the other people come in. I further suggested that anybody that's here now that may not be here with one of the programs or a work visa or a green card, that that they should you know, go to their employer if they're working for someone, or if they're, you know, freelancing, that they go to any immigration office and make sure that whatever documents they're here on are legal, are acceptable under the law. I know what I have suggested to several people that have contacted me. In fact, I can get online, and if somebody were to ask me, I could very easily check somebody out under the E-Verify program. What I have told people to do, especially contractor friends of mine that use day labor, make sure all of your people here are here legally. Make sure the documents they now have are acceptable. If they are not, then they need to go through the, take whatever documents they have now, go to the immigration office and comply with the law, get signed up, get in the program, and get their temporary work visa if they don't already have one, which a lot of them don't, and then over the next 2 years, make sure they go through the naturalization process. Now, the other side of the coin is, as much as I love the working class, the braceros, the immigrants, is I do have a problem with anyone by and large that's been here working in this country who fully intended to stay and make a better life for themselves and their family, who haven't consciously made an effort to obey the law by getting into the naturalization program. I think this concept that's out there now of sending people back is highly discriminatory. I don't think that should happen. I said no, that should never happen. I think charging people $5,000 to remain in this country legally and go through the process is nothing more than usury. I think it's politics. I think it's disgraceful and shameful, and I would stand up on any street corner and say the same thing, based on my experience, first as a farm boy, one who's used to labor, and one who spent considerable time with the labor force in Arizona, starting with my early experiences in the Bracero program. Mm-hmm. There was what I'm trying to say is that there was a rather, I don't like the word simple, but there was an uncomplicated method that we could have employed many years ago. We didn't have to be in this immigration mess that we're in now.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much.